Yo, it's Nick Cannon, and I love listening to the Dana Cortez Show podcast. It get real. It get intense. We going up. Let's go.
The Dana Cortez Show podcast begins now.
Welcome to the Dana Cortez Show with Nick Cannon.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh, no, we do something a little different, though, here. Anthony, you want to explain?
Yeah, before we kick off any interview, we do like a little pre-show ritual to kind of break the ice. Mm. We do two claps and a Ric Flair.
Okay.
So you know what Ric Flair does?
Of course he does.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Woo! That get the energy right?
That, yeah.
That bring
right.
The spirit into the room.
All of it. You feel it?
Yeah, that's what we do at church. You know.
Is that what you do at church?
Yeah, absolutely.
You do the Ric Flair woo at
yeah,
church?
Yeah, but it says old ladies falling and fainting. But
oh,
I think that's
okay.
Where I think that's where he got it from.
Paint his spirit.
Woo!
Nick Cannon, you are doing a million things. How many things are you into right now? Because I know you had to take a nap on the way over here because you do a morning show, first of all.
Yeah.
You got a radio show.
I was about to say, you about to try to count them all? Because I can't even.
I really, I swear. I tried looking it up and I'm like, I can't.
The funny thing is, I see it all as one job. It's one thing. I mean, when you try to compartmentalize what an entertainer does, it's like, where's your entry point? But when it's to me, it's like just I'm trying to be the best overall entertainer, content provider that I can possibly be. And so whether that's on your radio, your TV, your podcast, your live venues, it's all the same thing. I get to wake up and be creative every day.
What's the favorite project you're into right now?
The next one.
The next one. Is it always about what's next?
Yeah, I mean, and it's really just having that tunnel vision to just knock down whatever in front of me. You know, probably tonight I'll be in the studio and be so focused, you know, on whatever songs we're working on in the morning, and I'm focused on, you know, making the best content on radio. Then from there, I'm, you know, going to the set of The Masked Singer, trying to make sure that we operating and continuing to be the number one show on television. So it's whatever right in front of me.
How are you doing all that? And then I read that you're going to Howard too.
Yeah, man, I got school 2 days a week. I graduate in May, though, but it's been...
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's time management more than anything, but when I really figured out what college is actually probably easier than, like, high school and
way
the others.
I liked it way more.
Just because you get to create your own schedule, and really, most of college is a lot of extracurricular activities. Like, really, you're only doing 20 hours
you
of school at max.
You have time for extracurricular activities?
I don't. That's why I don't, like, I'm not in a fraternity and like
yeah,
I'm not in the band. Contrary to popular belief, I'm not playing the drums at Howard. I'm like, I'll go there, I'll do my schooling, and like even with like, you know, 16 to 20 hours a semester, you just kind of break it down.
So being that you're like super accomplished already, what made you want to go back to school?
I was just going to ask him, like, why would you go back to school with everything you already...
You know what's interesting? The industry that we're in, it's fly by night in the sense of you almost never know which way your career is going to go. Like one day it could be on a high, one day it's like, oh man, the game has changed and people are doing this differently. Or the one thing they can never take from you is your education. And I learned that like there was like this void in me that I felt like the only real things I have in my life is my family. And then I felt like my intellect, my intelligence. And like, I feel like when I step on that campus, that's the time where I'm the most comfortable because I feel like there's purpose there. Like
well,
I'm actually
knowledge. Nobody
yeah,
can take the knowledge from
exactly.
You.
It's like I'm ingesting stuff into me that people can't take. So regardless of if y'all think I'm the hottest entertainer today or you guys don't ever hear from me again, I still have a wealth of knowledge and information that I've gained that I could maneuver however I need to maneuver in this society.
How are classmates treat you? Like you walk in like it's a Nick Cannon. I don't know. It's just kinda...
I mean, like my freshman year, they used to like. Take Snapchats of me sleeping in class. But now they don't care. You know what I mean? Especially like in a sense, like the new freshmen kind of get a little excited when they see me on campus. But once like midterms hit, they don't give a damn. They trying to get that grade. So it's like, you know, every once in a while you got to take pictures and stuff like that. But that's everyday life. So I'm never bothered by that.
You mentioned they would take photos of you sleeping, the snaps of you sleeping. I think everyone does wonder, how does Nick Cannon rest? When do you sleep? And what's your secret to that?
He just woke up when he pulled up here.
Yeah. That's why I still got the glasses on. Yeah, so like, you look, my eyes is red, and that's not from chiefing. Like that's just literally just because I sleep and when we fight. But I operate on naps. Like, again, my philosophies are crazy. Like, I kind of say, like, humans think that they need 8 hours, but they only need 4. And then it's like, I'm trying to get down to that fact where I'm like, I sleep like a giraffe. They sleep like 45 minutes, like 4 times a day, and they get all of their rest that they need. Again, I am, you know, they got long ass necks eating grass all day, so, or trees, but that's different. But I really feel like, you know, I break my sleep up throughout the day in small increments, and it's been working. So,
how long you been doing that?
Probably since I was like 16 years old. Like, I think I've also managed that idea of, I was one of those hyperactive little kids that they diagnosed with ADD and said I was, so I always had way more energy than everybody else. So there was this happy balance that I figured out. It was like, yo, if I like don't sleep, I'm probably like level with everybody else. If I get too much sleep, I'm bouncing off the walls and stuff. So I kind of, that's the way I kind of was able to establish my chill, was just like kind of just operating on like 20 hour days. And I've been doing that since I was like 16.
So do your kids have that kind of energy?
Way too much. Like more than me. And especially like the twins, because they hitting you from like stereo, like left ear and right ear. So they, like my kids.
How is it having twins?
They don't sleep. But at this point, it's like, you know, thing one and thing two. They all over the place, but they keep each other company now. They're like best friends. So when they were like 2 and 3, that was the problem. When they got when they got to like 4 and 5, they just
how do you guys work that out? Because obviously everybody, if you don't know, if you've been living under a rock
for the last decade.
Yeah, Nick Cannon was married to Mariah Carey. Obviously they have a very great mutual co-parenting plan going on. How do you guys make that work between
you
both
know,
your busy
people
schedules?
Always ask me that, but I think the majority of people who are in what they call co-parenting situations do it very well. I think we hear about the salacious, over the top ones just in the media a lot of times that, you know, not making it work. But the majority of people I know, it's all about unconditional love for your children. When you put your kids first, you know, and stop being selfish, you're gonna make it work regardless.
So you think it's selfish if people don't put those kids first in their relationship?
When they make it about them, it's usually one of the parents are more, whether it's a money thing or a time thing, opposed to like, yo, what's best for the children?
This is different for you guys. You're not meeting up on the Walmart parking lot on Sunday nights to exchange kids.
Nah, definitely not that.
That'd be strange. Hey, it's Nick Cannon and Mariah Carey over here.
In Walmart, randomly. Yeah.
But shout out to the moms who do that exchange. Yeah. I appreciate y'all. Yeah,
and the dads who do it as well, you know what I mean?
Moms alone.
I know a lot of single fathers. I probably know more single fathers now who are stepping up and actually really being,
it's about time, because 88% of single parents that have custody of children are women. So thank you.
Yeah, nah,
to
but
the 12%.
The 12%. Well, I grew up in a household where it was like I had both. And, you know, my parents had me when they were teenagers. So I experienced living in a situation where when I lived with my dad, he was the best dad I could have. When I live with my mom was too, and so was my grandmother. So, you know, everybody's situation is different, so I don't judge anybody's situation.
Your family's obviously the most important thing to you.
Yeah,
100%. And recently you made news. Obviously, we
I
all
always
know.
Make news.
Well, you do.
A lot lately,
man. The Eminem news, you, M, Mariah.
That's old news, though.
So that's like, okay, what I was wondering. It's been dead for 10 years. How did it all of a sudden come
he
back?
He brought it back up. Like, and that's the thing, too. Like, probably people are going to see this interview and thought, like, I'm out here still talking about this dude.
I asked.
Yes, you brought. And
I
so,
asked.
Like,
how can I not ask?
He reignited it again, probably because he knew he had an album coming out or whatever it was. But, like, this, for whatever reason, like, they had whatever they had 20 years ago, then 10 years later he brought it up again, and that's when we were married, and he said some very disrespectful things, and just based off of the merit of my family and my wife, and then even the constructs of what you believe, if someone says something disrespectful about your family, you're not supposed to do something. So I felt like, yo, you said you talked your talk, let's figure it out. And you know, a lot of people ain't solid. They not built like real men. So, you know, they chose to go other ways about it. And then once he brought it up again, I chose to handle it in the same fashion.
Would you meet with him and talk to him like man to man? We're talking about grown folk conversation.
Yeah, I've tried. But I think, you know, he's not built like that. So which I understand. He doesn't live in a world that's really a reality and probably hasn't in a couple of decades. So he's a person that feels like, yo, I can say whatever I want to say and I don't have to deal with any consequences. And that, you know, that's like that Donald Trump mentality to where you just say stuff and you don't really feel like it affects actual real people.
All right, but you would be open to meeting with him and saying, let's let this go.
I've tried. I went looking.
How do you look for Eminem?
What do you mean you went looking? Explain that.
How do you look for Eminem?
Yeah. I know all his people. You know what I mean? I've talked to everybody that you could talk to, from labels to managers. And we're like, you know, at that time, we had a mutual, like, I was managed by Chris Lighty, God rest his soul, who also managed, 50 Cent and a bunch of people. So it was real. Yeah. So I was like, yo, what we need to do? And, you know, there was some apologies behind the scenes and it's just entertainment. I was like, nah, that's not, like, you can't apologize to me in quiet, but then act tough, you know, in the media. Like, we really got to deal with this.
Do you think it's all entertainment based, or do you think there's,
like I said, that's
beef?
His perspective. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, you can't have beef when you a chicken. You know what I'm saying?
That's coming from a vegetarian.
Like, it's like one of those things where, like, what's real? I grew up in situations where what you would call beef is real serious. So I would never think of this as beef. And that's why this time around we made it more, you know, playful about, like, coming on Wildin' Out and doing those type
I
of things.
I thought that's what it was. I swear, I said, this is a Wildin' Out
said,
promo.
That's
what I said.
I was making it that, even though he chose to, you know, make fun of my family's mental health and all that, because there's nothing funny about that. And he chose to, again, use terms about women that, you know, a specific woman in my life that are really disrespectful, that, you know, I don't even care to repeat, and I got a effed up mouth. But it's just like, I'll let all of that slide if you want to do it for entertainment, and then at the same time, they still go running.
Well, you know, you just talked about the love that you have for your children, you and Mariah. What kind of advice? Because there are young people that have kids that don't, unfortunately, raise their children happily together. You know, there's drama involved with the man, the woman. They're fighting still about things that don't matter. What kind of advice would you offer to them, since you experienced that yourself as a child, and as a parent, you're co-parenting in a very positive way?
Understand how to be selfless. Understand that, how to protect your energy and protect your family's energy at all times. And when you put your children first and don't put yourself first, and, you know, really understanding the institution of what parenthood is supposed to be about, you'll be fine. And again, that all goes back to education and understanding, not like school education, but just really the know-how, the wherewithal, the wisdom that comes with being a family and being in that structure of a household. And how, even
some people don't have that example, though. You know, like, if you don't have it, sometimes it's very difficult to understand it or even try.
And that's an institutional issue, you know what I mean? Because when you, we all come from communities of tradition, you know what I mean? And that's what we all try to hold on to. So basically, somebody did it right throughout your lineage. So it depends how far back you got to look. But if you got at some point, somebody, some patriarch, some matriarch in your family established the love, and it was generational. So hopefully, you know, some of us, our parents may not be the ones who have it. So you got to look to your grandparents. Like you said, my grandparents helped raise me. And then even to this day, I got my great-grandmother is 100 years old with all her faculties and moves. And like, yo, that's the ultimate matriarch in our family. And when we walk and when we move, we're doing it for her. We honor her. So therefore, everybody who within that family tree structure knows that, like, yo, we owe it to her to uphold ourselves in such a manner.
You ever see yourself getting remarried, like getting into that again?
Nah.
Never?
Nah, I'd never do that again.
Like, just, why?
Because that's as from what I've learned, like, that's just why do you need
it wasn't
to
for you.
Why do you need to involve the government in your love life?
Preach.
Well, you need to have a contract with
the guy who's not married.
But I'm just saying, like, I got to prove my love for you, we got to do paperwork.
No,
we're gonna have this ritual at a contract signing.
Why did you do it?
I gotta get dressed up.
No.
I gotta get dressed up to go sign a contract.
What's changed? Why did you do it the first time?
Interestingly enough, Mariah and I share very similar views, and she had been in situations in the past where we were like, yo, if we're gonna do this, we're gonna have fun with it, and we're not trying to do it for others and for what society believes. We're gonna do it because we want to do it. And when we did it, we had ceremonies every year, and it was love ceremonies that we practiced, and it was more about us just having a good time, right, opposed to like, yo, look at us, we're married, and look at the size of our rings, and hey, come, you know, hey, we're this perfect married couple. It's like, nah, we best friends that want to build something together, and it'd be great to be able to have some children and do it for as long as it lasts. And that's, I think, why we're able to coexist
so
now.
Why do you think it didn't last, and what happened?
I mean, it's one of those things where when you sit back and you approach it for what's best for your children and what's best for your lifestyles, mm-hmm, and where we could, again, coexist, and I have no disdain or
I can tell you have a lot of love for her.
Yeah, like, yeah. I love her just as much today as I did the first day we met. So it's that sense of where I don't have conflict with people. And I'd rather, before we get to that space, like, let's amicably just kind of fall back and do it the best way you could possibly do it.
I like that, but I still think one day you're going to get married when you meet the right one.
Why? Who? Okay, who would that right one be?
I don't know. Describe this type. No.
Describe this type of person that I would be.
You're a fun dude. I think you want a partner. I think you want a partner. You're not looking at
I'm good. I'm good.
No, I'm not talking about
a partner. I like playing solitaire. I don't need no partners.
Hell yeah.
I can entertain myself.
This guy here crying about it. He's a pretty busy guy. I get it. But
even
that,
it has nothing to do with a guy. I feel like I believe in love. Love is an amazing thing.
Who are you dating now?
What is dating? What
Just
does that
like,
mean?
Who are you hanging out with?
Are you getting a law degree?
That's what I'm saying. Every time I got an answer, he got a question.
I do what you do. This ain't new to me.
I know it's not. There's got to be somebody you're hanging out with.
I hang out with several people.
Is one more special than the other?
Why would I do that? Do you have, like, you have a lot of friends, right? Like, people.
No,
you grow
I'm
up,
not a friendly person.
But I'm just saying, like, we all have friends. Would you have to choose, like, what if there was a law that said you were only allowed to have one friend for the rest of your life? Probably, like, I got friends that
so
I grew up with when
I
was
in. So what you're
saying
is you believe in polygamy?
No, because that's a rule, too. To define me is to confine me. So I'd rather be able to hang out with this person.
Everybody
this person,
who's
everything.
Seeing you right now does not feel special.
Why should everybody that knows me in my life definitely know that they're special to me? Okay. All my friends, I got brothers, I got siblings.
It's like Facebook. If it doesn't say in a relationship, it's not special. You're not making her feel special right now.
Yeah, but like Facebook, in that sense, that's the thing. That's people want to join and
they
want to be a part of something. Yeah. I'm a free spirit.
And he's a busy man. The fact that he's giving her his time. Those 24 hours is something he can't ever get back.
So the fact
that you're giving her that time should make you feel special. How many jobs you got? More than we can count at. He's going to give you what?
Again, I don't want to be... I hate disappointing people. And to me, like, even when it goes back to like my health and stuff, like a relationship resembles stress in my life. So in order for me to be able to operate this lifestyle and be as healthy as I possibly can, I can't have anything tied
in. That's another
down.
Job.
Exactly. So why would I want that? Like, I don't need that. I got to be the best father I can be first and foremost. So if I get in a relationship, that means that relationship has to take precedent over me being a father, and can't nothing take precedent over that.
I do like that, because
we
need a lot of good fathers. That was really good. Now all the women really want you.
Something you do want to do, and something I love seeing you do, Masked Singer.
Oh yeah, hello. That's a good time.
I just saw my first episode.
I'm not going.
Oh, after the Super Bowl.
Now he's like
That was set up and designed that way, because people didn't like. Obviously, we've been the number one show on television for a few seasons, but still, a lot of people hadn't seen it.
So this
is crazy. Like,
well, the production, the way you guys shoot it, it's a good
Who's
job.
Who's been your favorite guest so far on that? I mean, there's been so many people, incredible people.
Yeah.
Who could you say really where you were like, that was amazing?
I mean, one of the most recent ones, Lil Wayne, probably.
And
it was interesting because
Nobody thought it was Wayne.
First of all, if you know Wayne, like knowing Wayne personally, like Wayne don't, he moves kind of like a true artist. He doesn't pay attention to what's going on in the world.
And
he does only what he wants to do, you know. And when he told me that he was a fan of the show, I was like, what? Like, that's crazy. And then there was conversation of him actually doing it. And like, to me, as a producer, I try to stay out of it because I want to play the game too. I don't want to know who's what and who's going. So I was like,
you don't know who's coming out?
No, not at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's even better.
Yeah, so because I like to play along. So once I knew, I was like, he told me in the first season that he rocked with the show. So I was like, well, hey, maybe one day if you would ever do it. I didn't think he would actually do it. And then when we finally took the robot head off, I was like, he actually, you know what I mean? Like, yes. It was a surprise to me, but I knew it was going to be a surprise to the world. Because
you've hosted many things. What's your favorite thing about hosting?
You know, it's crazy. I don't like hosting. I actually hate hosting.
Why is that?
Well, you got a lot of
you got a morning show hosting radio.
Well, see, radio is a different beast than what a host does.
Scripted,
yeah, and like to me, the beauty of radio is an intimate forum where we could talk about real things. We could be real. We could be vulnerable. It's the most intimate form of entertainment that there is. Hosting, you just really standing there reading a teleprompter. Yeah. If you could read well, you could be a pretty good host. You know, we've seen many people do it. So that's why it does. I'm an artist. I'm a creator. Creative at nature. So when I get a job to stand there and read a teleprompter, I'll do it. I love it, you know, because again, it allows me to do other things in the creative space. And even like, if you notice, I probably won't host something if I don't produce it. So, and I learned that on, you know, various shows. So to answer your question, it's probably like, I'll host anything that's mine. You know, if I'm a producer, if I've created it, I have no problem hosting it. But if it's just like another, it's New Year's Eve, it's Christmas morning, like, all right, give me the teleprompter, I'll read it. But I usually love hosting things that are truly like my events, my parties, my TV shows, my creations. Like, obviously, Wildin' Out is probably one of the most fun.
How long has Wildin' Out been going on now?
I created that in 2004.
I can't believe it.
Yeah,
so it's a good run.
Yeah,
it's
16
seasons.
And
every time I look at VH1, it's all on.
Yeah, and at VH1, MTV2, MTV, and I think now they're going to start airing it on Comedy Central,
What's
too.
Next?
You
have a daytime TV show coming, right?
Yeah, we have a daytime talk show launching this fall, so it'll be on every single day.
What is that going to be like?
Again, I think it's one of those things where I get an opportunity to utilize a platform that hasn't seen someone like myself who kind of does multiple things, create a real true central hub. I mean, shouts out to everybody who's excelled at it, and from Ellen to Oprah, but from someone coming from a perspective of intellect and can have, you know, intelligent conversations, but also a stand-up comedian, also a musician, also someone who is a television producer. Like, I think this will be the first time where it'll be like the central intelligence of Nick Cannon. So it won't seem like, oh, you do a bunch of things. Like, nah, you do this one thing and all of that. Are kind of offshoots.
Be like a variety show almost?
Nah, I mean, it'd be your typical daily show.
It's a talk show.
Yeah, it's a talk show.
Talk
yeah.
Show.
I got one last
But point. It'll probably have a lot of variety in it because that's just who I am.
For my comedians out there, of the Wildin' Out alum, which comedian post Wildin' Out has made you the most proud from a producer aspect? Like, which comedian have you looked at and been like, man, he took this and made something with it?
Man.
Or she.
That's like getting to try to name his favorite.
Yeah, because I'm proud of everybody, man. I mean, again, like, you got to go back to the origins when I kind of created this show. It was like in a small comedy club, in the back of a small comedy club, like, and just hanging with cats like Kevin Hart and Cat Williams and D-Ray Davis and Afion Crockett, and just really watching these brothers excel and take their careers to another level. And I can't take credit for none of that stuff. It's just knowing that we kind of all started on the grind together, and I was able to build a platform to allow their talents to kind of, you know, take
let
off.
Let them shine.
But I mean, and even now it really has become that. It's almost like, yo, you got to go through Wildin' Out, especially with a lot of these social media comedians and things. Like, if you step foot on Wildin' Out, that's kind of a launching pad in a big way. But I mean, if I had to pinpoint one person that I just truly proud of, because I watched this person go from like a child to like being a star, it's probably like Pete Davidson. just because I was doing radio in New York, and it was this little kid, like 14, 15 years old, that would call my show every morning and tell me that he was funny and he had jokes. And I used to do a stand-up, a weekly stand-up show. And I told him he could do the open mic, and he came through, and it was actually funny. And I would talk to his mom and tell him he should, you know, once he finished high school, I'd take him on the road with me. And, you know, now he's one of the biggest stars off of SNL.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah, so I would probably say Pete probably more than anything.
Wow, well, we wish Pete well because yeah. we know he's been very open. You talked about mental health.
Absolutely.
It's nothing to make fun of. We know Pete has been very open, and that's a great thing because it lets others open up.
Indeed.
About their issues as well, with no shame.
Totally, totally.
All right, well, I always ask this question. We're wrapping things up. What's your message to your fans? You've been able to do this for a very long time.
You know what's crazy? I don't feel like I have fans.
What?
I feel like, if anything, I have constituents or family. You know, like, fans, like, are those people that, and shout out to everybody who does have fans, but those, like, those extreme followers that die hard for that individual,
well,
no matter what they do.
It's short for fanatical.
Yeah. So I don't really have fans. I have people that appreciate my work in certain aspects. So I have people who like The Masked Singer. I have people who like Wildin' Out. Or even like you, or people who may appreciate a song that I did, or like a movie. Where there's certain, like, Mariah got fans. You know what I mean? Like, those are people who are like, she can't do no wrong. And people's like, I be fucking up all the time. And people be like, I ain't like when you did that. Or I don't like when you said that. Like, and I think, and shouts out to everybody who have those type of people. But I've never really had that.
Do you think people see you more as a real person?
I think that's what it is.
I'm not saying Mariah's not real, but Mariah for me is like, oh my gosh, she's a perfect singer.
Yeah.
She's above and beyond. I could never, you know.
I think it's just the way that I've always presented myself. I've never presented myself as, because I don't consider myself a celebrity or a star. Like, I'm just one of those people. Like, I'm just a regular person who, like you said, has a lot of jobs or works
in,
works in the entertainment field. So I've never presented myself to where, and if I do have fans, I mean, I appreciate them, but I think it's a small group where everybody else just kind of appreciates the various things that I do. And that may be because I do so many different things that people kind of check in and out wherever it is that they like.
So you just obviously you were in L.A. when we all got the Kobe Bryant news. We were there as well covering the Grammys, and walking onto that red carpet, there was this feeling of joy. And then within 10 minutes, it was very difficult. The day was very difficult. Where were you when you found out, and how did you talk about that news the next day? Because you're in L.A.
Yeah, you know, it's different. Crazy. Like, if you had to ask, know where I actually really was. I was in a prison. I was at a prison with Suge Knight.
Okay.
And so I was there with Suge, and when you're like in a prison, they don't give you, you know, you don't have access to a phone and stuff. So I was kind of there all day. So when I came out and actually got access to my mobile devices and stuff again, I saw everything, and my phone was blowing up, and I just didn't believe it. It took. You know, at least an hour or two just for it to, like, download.
We didn't believe it.
For me, I was like, nah, this is a joke. It's a prank. Like, I couldn't, and especially coming from an environment like that into news like that, I was like, wait, hold up. I got to catch my bearings. And then, you know, I drove to my grandmother's house and to my mother's house and kind of, like, allowed it to kind of sink in there. And then, you know, just like everybody else, mourned it and wished it hadn't happened, and, you know, could only send prayers and positive energy to his family and all the families of the lives that were lost.
How did you deliver that news the next day? Because you do have a radio show now in L.A., and I think it's considered one of the leaders, especially, that's the core of the radio station we're on, loves Kobe.
Man, it was difficult. It was a lot of tears, but we watched the city of L.A. come together, and the strength that Mamba mentality really just took over, and we made it more of a celebration of Kobe's life than it was about, because, you know, first getting over that disbelief, but then that next day of like, okay, we have to deal with it. And
these families are really going through this.
Yeah.
All these families.
And it was just nothing but calls of and great stories of how amazing of a person Kobe was, and you know how much he loved his family. And then it was like we were just celebrating families, and we were celebrating mothers, and understanding, you know, what Vanessa has to go through as a mother who lost a husband as well as a child, and still has to continue to be a mother to her other daughters. And so when you start to get to the core of, one, humanizing Kobe, because he's a superhero to most of us, and that we feel like we lost a superhero. Like it always, it kind of reminded me of that scene of like the new animated Spider-Man movie when Peter Parker actually died, and you saw like the whole like Times Square was like going crazy. Nobody believed it. Like it felt like that. Like we lost one of our superheroes.
He's mortal.
Yeah, superheroes aren't supposed to die. So then when you were able to humanize the experience, we all lose people, and we've all lost people who are close to us. So then you are able to deal with it in that manner, to where it made you love, share, and embrace the family that you have close to you. And that's kind of what I did when I instantly heard the message. It's like, man, it makes you put everything in a proper perspective and know that we all on a ticking clock. And so you got to get the most out of, you know, every day.
I think, you know, when something tragic like that happens, I try to take a lesson from it. Like, I still get emotional thinking about it, especially when you said as a mother having to raise her children without her one daughter and then her husband.
Yeah.
But you want to take the message of love and be kind to one another. And that's
indeed
why I hope you and Eminem meet up one day.
Have you ever talked to him?
Hell no.
Thank you.
I wish I could. Call me, Em. We'll put you on. I'll hook y'all up. We'll
but
go.
You can talk to me anytime. I'm right here.
We'll go eat meatless wings. Nick Cannon, Dana Cortez Show. Thank you for stopping by.
No doubt. Anytime. God bless you too.
The Dana Cortez Show podcast.